Thanks for checking us out right here on our Unlimited Unloaded page, either on SoundCloud or Apple Podcasts. The best way to get the shows if you miss them. Of course, we want you to listen to them as they stream live each morning and early afternoon on Bulls Beat, but understand A, can't always do that, and B, sometimes you want to go back and listen to a show, which I'm not going to complain. So in this situation, coming up in just a few minutes, the new track and field and cross country coach, Eric Jenkins, the part that you didn't get to hear on Bulls Beat where he goes over his coaching staff, Damon Griffiths, who is the cross country and distance assistant. So you'll be seeing him on Saturday morning. Ramiro Henry, Abigail Dean, MKM, which I'm probably going to call her, but the throwing coach, Mariami Kevkishvili Machavariani. I'll have it down pat. But anyway, all of those comments from Eric Jenkins coming up in just a little bit. We'll start off, though, with women's soccer. There was a record that was broken last night, and it was the American Athletic Conference record for total points in a career. Points, you get 2 for a goal and 1 for an assist, so basically the all-time leading score. And of course, I'm talking about Evelyn Vienne, who had 2 goals and an assist in a 3-1 win at Houston. Already the school's all-time leading score now has 59 goals, one shy of, well, you can do the math, but it was good because this morning I was able to, thanks to the folks at Houston, get an actual copy of the video of the game, and it was something that wasn't expressed in any of the game recaps, and so I'm glad I got to see it. Namely, she headed in a goal. Usually, I talk about how most of her shots are low, and then the other day in practice, she was cranking them into the corners, but I'd never seen her head in a goal. Well, it was like nothing to it. It was on a good build-up. By the way, Houston had a pretty vociferous crowd, so Bulls prevailed. I'm not going to quite call it a hostile environment, but in a tough-to-win environment, and they had no issues with it, and particularly on this goal. It was Andrea Hochstadter serving it up to Aubrey McGrath, who put in a perfect cross. Incidentally, they both got credited with an assist, and rightfully so. Vienne had no choice but to head it, and she did so beautifully across the face of the goal. They actually announced it as a McGrath goal, but if you saw that during the live stats and were confused, it was definitely Evelyn Vienne. And then it was just a typical Vienne getting a feed from Sydney Nicello up the left wing and then basically taking her time, cutting across, getting into the penalty box, near post, right-footed shot that maybe the Cougars goalie could have gotten to. Diego Bocanegra, their head coach, said that they gave up a couple of soft goals. That really was the one softest one. What he did say about being intimidated by the Bulls probably makes a little bit more sense. And what he said about how they came out in the second half and played their best half of the year also makes a lot of sense, because Bulls had a 3-0 lead at the break, and the Cougars got the only goal in the second half, but still a 3-1 win. Speaking of McGrath, she definitely got the third goal off of a goal-mouth scramble. Vienne got credit for an assist there. Then, well, things weren't as good in the second half, according to Denise Shilty Brown on GoUSFBulls.com. We didn't move very well. It's easy to get complacent when you go up 3 goals, and kind of hinted at that being the thing that happened. 7-3, 2-1 on the season. Now, they still have a big-time opponent that's ranked to play this weekend, and that'll be Sunday. However, SMU did lose at home last night to UCF by the count of 2-1. Men's team has a road game, and they will be at Tulsa. Tulsa is 3-5 on the season, but a tough schedule. They've fallen to number 2 Kentucky. They've dropped a couple in overtime, and they just lost to the number 2 team in the country, according to some polls, SMU, 5-1. They only have one player that has scored more than one goal. That's Harris Partain with 3, but then they have 10 others with 1 goal. Volleyball going up against ECU tonight, and then Cincinnati on Sunday. Had a chance to talk to head coach Courtney Draper. You heard the first part of our conversation, which basically centered around last weekend and some of the standouts individually. He let me know that Lauren Lebeck will be back after missing last weekend with an ailment. I'm telling you, tonight is pretty critical. ECU is 0-2. Of course, it wants to get back into the conference picture. And Cincinnati, frankly, is going to be a bear to try and defeat. So sometimes you have to admit it's going to be tough to pull off a win. So if the Bulls don't pull off a win tonight, you could be looking at 1-3 to start off conference play. Bree Wood leads the Pirates from the right side, the junior, with a team-high 179 kills. Sydney Kleinman, also a junior, averages 3.4 kills per set, which leads the team. They got off to a red-hot start, 11-1 at one point before, again, falling in their first two conference matches. That's who the Bulls will start off their road trip with tonight. Critical matchup on Friday. I mean, to me, that's as pivotal as the matchup on Sunday, which we'll get to in a second.
That's right. So East Carolina right now is 12-3. They did go 0-2 opening weekend, but it was some of the toughest teams in the conference with Cincinnati and Tulsa. So, you know, they have some really nice physical pieces. They run a lot of different offenses. Sometimes they're in a 5-1, sometimes they're in a 6-2. There's a lot of different players that you need to scout and pick up their tendencies to prepare our players, you know, the best that we can.
I know that, you know, from an offensive standpoint, the difference between a 5-1 and a 6-2 with the two setters, you have more of a true attack the whole time. But how does it throw you off defensively, not being sure what's going to happen? I mean, you have to really be well in advance prepared for both, right?
That's right. When the setter is front row, it kind of eliminates the third hitter. So there's only two hitters to focus on, which makes it a little bit easier, naturally. But when teams are in that 6-2, there's really six attackers to prepare for. And they also switch things up. Maybe they switch their middles or they switch their outside. So you don't really have to just memorize six rotations. You're really looking at somewhere between 12 and 15 rotations sometimes that you want to be prepared for. So our staff has certainly spent all week preparing, you know, some film and talking to our girls in the gym about what we need to do to be successful there.
And then last, it seems like she is six attackers, Jordan Thompson. We've talked about her in the past. Just for the audience, what makes her so darn good? She only, you know, leads the country in kills, playing for the national team. Other than that, she's an ordinary player.
Yeah, Jordan Thompson is almost invincible. I mean, she's at 5.84 kills per set, which, like you said, does lead the country. And not only does she have that many kills, but she's also hitting in a 340 hitting percentage. We look at hitting percentage a little bit like baseball, where, you know, if you're hitting a 300 or better, you're sure doing your job. And she's at a 340 right now. So, of course, we'll be putting a lot of emphasis on Jordan. She's playing six rotations for them, so she gets the ball. They set her a lot out of the back row as well as the front row. So in that situation, it's almost like having four hitters that you have to track because it's the three front row hitters plus her out of the back row. So
is she one that can still come pretty much straight down from the back row, or does she go with more touch?
Yeah, no, she's a powerful player. There's power players, there's more finesse players. I'd put her in the power category for sure. And of course, she's a great blocker for them too. So, you know, that too, we've been studying. Our staff has done a lot of film. They played a tough schedule, and they're sitting at 10-4 right now. They actually played East Carolina, so that was a good match for us to watch because those are the two opponents, obviously, that we have this weekend.
And we can update you on two fronts. First of all, Cincinnati has already played this afternoon and defeated UCF in a straight setter. 25-19, 26-24, clearly that was the key set, and 25-20. For a three-set match, Jordan Thompson had 28 kills. So you just heard Courtney Draper said she was leading the country in around six kills per set. Well, you do the math, that's more than nine per. And she hit a 468. Maria Mallon, she's good too. She would put down 16. So yeah, the Bearcats are very, very difficult. And we can also tell you about women's golf, as it has completed the first round of the Princess Anne Invitational up in Virginia Beach. Now, they are 12th out of 15 teams, but if you look at the score, they're really still in it with two rounds to go, just six shots out of fourth. Virginia Tech leads at 4-under, then LSU 1-under, Chattanooga even, then again to 6-over for both the College of Charleston and UCF. The Bulls shot a 13-over par on the par 70 course. Top score for the Bulls turned in by the freshman, Erica Smith, alongside of Sadie Duenton-Davies, both at 2-over. While Ramya Meenakshi-Shindaram was at a 73 3-over, and the last score counted being a 6-over, the same number turned in by Jessica Whitting and Ashley Zagers. For Smith, she birdied the third, then had three bogeys on her next four holes, settled it down from there. 11 straight pars to finish out for Duenton-Davies. Had a birdie on the 16 to get to 1-over, but ended up bogeying the final hole. And for Meenakshi-Shindaram, pretty steady. 3-over, 15 pars, 3 bogeys. So again, they'll be back tomorrow. And the men are up in Wisconsin, and they'll start on Sunday. So again, we'll have much more on that on Monday's show. Tennis is sending a couple of ladies to the Bedford Cup down in Fort Myers, hosted by FGCU. Members of number 19 UCF will be there, 24th-ranked Florida. So good experience expected for Yanvi Clark and Alexandra Mijos. We will speak about how they perform. On Monday's show, I ran into head coach Christina Morris, set up a conversation with her for next week. Sailing has an event as well. Their top skipper, Marina Barzagli, was unable to race last weekend, which kind of hindered them, but they will be headed back to New London, Connecticut for an event this weekend. We'll tell you how they do. And oh yeah, at the Claw, that would be the golf course at USF, 7 a.m., the only home race for cross country. And that's why I wanted to talk to head coach Eric Jenkins, even though we got into a lot more of how a guy who was the last 11 seasons, though he's from Quincy, Florida, at Western Kentucky, 30 conference championships between cross country, men's and women's and track, came to USF. And well, quite compelling. Here is the new cross country and track and field head coach of the Bulls, Eric Jenkins.
Let's see. Last time you heard Eric Jenkins' voice on this channel outside the coach's show, if you're listening to that, was when Michael Kelly hired you. I guess a few things have happened since then. But just to go back to that whole situation, because you were at the school you're at for quite a long time, Western Kentucky. I know you're a Florida guy, but it had to take a little bit of a sales pitch to get you to come to USF. What was that whole process like? I know it was a big decision, too.
Right. Fun and sunshine. Okay. The pitch wasn't too hard. I wanted to go somewhere I felt had upward trajectory, and I thought that this was a slate that could be molded in a lot of different ways positively. For me, talking to Mr. Kelly was huge. I think he's one of the good ones in this business. From the folks I talked to, they all had good things to say, whether it be ADs, football coaches, whoever it was. I had the pleasure of obviously being in Tampa and coming over to the campus. The last time I was actually on campus, well, two times, let's back it up. So I was here for the NCAA first round 2 years ago. And I thought that, wow, they've got some things going here, and this could be good. Maybe a year prior to that, I was on campus right after South Florida played Florida State in football and sweated out there in that game at the Buccaneer Stadium, and was supporting at the time Coach Taggart and his staff. So very familiar with the Bulls, and when the opportunity arose and I got the call, I was extremely excited. I'm still excited today, and I've got a staff that's extremely excited as well.
You mentioned your staff, and you mentioned Taggart and sort of, you know, having that relationship with USF, so it wasn't like, where's this school from? Let's get to your staff, though, because it wasn't just you. That was part of your job, not just to lead the program, but to get the whole staff. Did you enlist other people's help with that? How did that whole process go? And sort of give the people a roundup of who you hired.
Well, there are a lot of good coaches in this country, but I needed to find people who I thought fit what we needed here at USF to be successful. And that started with hiring people that I felt willing to work. This is a program in which we're going to build it the right way, and I had to have people around me to help me build it the right way. So the first person we brought on was Coach Dean. I mean, he's been successful at George Mason, Tennessee, North Carolina, and all of those places he went in. And, you know, wasn't great there, and they kept building, and he was a part of that. Coach Henry, who worked with me at Western Kentucky, you know, had a lot of success at the junior college level, the NAIA level, and then when he came to Western Kentucky, which was the Division I level, he did some really good things in a short amount of time, and I've been very impressed by his work ethic and his ability to recruit. Then you go into Coach Mario. I mean, she's multi-time national champion, two-time Olympian. You know, she's been around the block. She competed at the University of Florida, so she wanted to get to Florida, understood Florida, and that was big for me. And I knew her during her time when she was at Ole Miss and watched what she was able to develop when she was at Ole Miss, and even having some of the best throwers on the women's side there at UConn where she just came from. So, again, it made a lot of sense of having someone that could help us build. And again, just – the people we have around us, Coach Griffiths coming from the University of Miami, obviously another heavy Florida connection. I would see him everywhere recruiting. And to me, nice. He was a guy that would recruit. He was a distance coach, but he could recruit sprinters. Mm-hmm. He could recruit jumpers. He could recruit you saw Coach Griffiths everywhere recruiting everything. And I felt that was the type of person I needed around. I needed jacks of all trades. Yeah. So if we sent Coach Griffiths to a meet and he could recruit a distance runner or a thrower, and the same thing with Coach Dean. So everyone here can really, really recruit. So having that and feeling comfortable with those people, and obviously doing my preliminary work on each individual, I've obviously known Coach Dean a long time and Coach Henry. And Coach Henry, even coming to Western Kentucky, was highly recommended to people by people I know and trust, and his record spoke volumes. Really, really happy with where we are and where we're going. We've just got to get out and recruit the type of individuals that will come in and take the mantle, or I should say, take the bull by the horns, and let's move it program forward. Because we're not going to shy away from competition. We're not going to, if we get beat, we're going to get beat by good people. Mm-hmm. And if you look at our schedule, which will be coming out very soon, it shows that. So, again, we might come away with a couple black eyes, but at the end of it, you ought to see the other guy. So that's kind of going to be our approach. And, again, we're excited about it. I think we've got the right person, leadership position for us, again, going back to Mr. Kelly. And I think his vision for the program You know, that is what intrigued me, and that is what I told my staff. I said, you know, I'm not here to say it. I'm here to tell you what we can do, and it all starts with him.
I know that, you know, not only did you have to envision a new staff, but you also had to look at your program, take stock, and that kind of thing. How much time is on the recruiting trail?
Being in Tampa, it's not a hard sell. You know, the biggest thing we're running into, because the national brand of USF hasn't quite hit the track and field world. And I would probably say, if you ask the other coaches, there are some pockets where people just don't know about us. But like I told a young man last night who's being recruited by some of the traditional track and field powers, he said, well, coach, I've never heard of USF. And I said, well, great, this is my opportunity to enlighten you about my institution. And he said, oh, coach, I like that. But it was one of the things that I look forward to telling people about. It, you know, I'm learning things every day about this institution. A couple of weeks ago, my staff and I, we just jumped in a car and said, we're just gonna go touch the high schools. In doing that, people were shocked to see us there first and foremost. Secondly, once they got over, like, okay, what are you guys doing? What are you? Then it was like, oh, wow, you actually came to our school? You came to see us? You know, and just trying to reconnect with the coaches in the area, because this is a very good area for athletics. And even from an academic standpoint, I mean, a large footprint of the students that are here are from the area, and they're doing very well academically. And that's something we're selling really hard, because me being from Florida, you know, the traditional schools, I'll tell you, my first recollection of USF was actually by a guy who was a basketball player from our area. His name was Brian Lamb. That was my first, like, okay, South Florida? Oh, there's a South Florida? Because again, you know, the traditional. And so even coming back to it, when I came down this time, they were like, oh yeah, he's doing good things, and so on and so forth. I can also remember BJ Daniels, that name sound familiar?
Yeah. Going to beat Florida State.
Florida State. And he was from Tallahassee, Lincoln, I believe. And I can remember being in Kentucky going, wow, mm-hmm. They just knocked off the Seminoles. Yeah. You know, so seeing those type of things, I'm going, why not us?
Let's get folks to know about what's happening this Saturday morning, the cross-country meet, the only one that USF is hosting this year, right? Now, we talked about the weather situation before we hit record. Obviously, this time of year, you want to go early in the morning. Let people know, though, the last time, was it last year, the cross-country championships, a different situation. It's not always going to be warm out.
No, it's not. So starting off first with our home meet, it will be at the Claw this weekend. You know, the collegiate version of it will start at 7. You know, we expect a good group of teams to come out. There will also be a high school component to it this year.
Okay.
So, you know, not only could you see a good collegiate meet, but you also can see some of the best local distance talent in the area. And going back to last year, you know, and we probably expected to be in the 80s early in the morning. Maybe 70s will be a great day. But last year, the NCAA championships in Madison, Wisconsin, snow on the ground, windy, cold. I had on a winter jacket, a rain suit, sweatsuit, water boots, and I still was cold. And so, you know, I really appreciate getting up early in the morning. We were at the University of Florida a couple weeks ago, and it was very strange being up that early for distance meets, because most of the distance meets in years past that I would go to would start about 9:30 or 10. And so starting it that early when you could barely see out in front of you, that was a pretty unique situation. But hey, we'll get it done, and we're excited about it.
So the point is, you mentioned it's not being a difficult sell to come to Florida. The trade of the beautiful weather in Bowling Green, Kentucky for maybe some heat and then a nice winter, you're going to take that trade?
Oh, yeah, we're going to take it every day. Okay. I mean, again, you know, when you're looking at the possibility of, you know, getting snowed in, things of that nature.
But you get the change of colors.
For a short amount of time. You do. You know, I'll just blink hard here and get it changed in my mind.
We look forward to seeing you on Saturday. Since it's so early, I'm actually going to make it before the football game, and then we'll get with you after that schedule's announced for track and field. Thanks, Coach.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Pretty interesting stuff there about the recruiting trail. Can't help but get excited. And again, early Saturday morning, that'll be going. And then early Saturday morning, you can just roll on into our pregame show at 10 o'clock is when we'll hit the air. Monday, we'll recap it all for you on Bulls Beat. Thanks for listening. I'm Derek Sharp. Tell your friends about Bulls Unlimited and Bulls Unlimited 2. Horns up.